יהיו לרצון אמרת פי והגיון לי בלפניך אדוני צורי וגואלי. שלום עליכם, ברוכים הבאים. Welcome everybody. We are continuing in our series, which I have entitled Gateway to Kabbalah, based upon the name of the book that we are learning called Shar Kabbalah, which translates, of course, as Gateway to Kabbalah. This is in our normal open forum series of classes, which is why those of you who are listening live have the opportunity of attending this class for free. And of course, recordings of this class, like all other classes, are available on koshertorah.com for the appropriate fee. Tonight, we are in the fourth lesson of the Gateway to Kabbalah series, just to timestamp us. It is the 18th of June, 2012. And of course, I am speaking to you from my log cabin out here in the woods in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. So, with no further ado, let us dive right in. As you know, those of you who are here with me live, before our class this evening, as I do with most classes, we were listening to and hopefully enjoying some of my peculiar tastes in music. Well, tonight, all music revolved around a theme. And that theme, of course, was conflict. I played for you the theme songs from the United States Marine Corps, the Army Band. I played for you Indiana Jones and Star Wars, as well as, of course, the famous overture, the 1812 overture. All of these revolve around the issue of conflict. And where we are right now in our discussion, that was the appropriate introduction. As you know, this course is discussing what has become known as the Ten Sefirot, the divine emanations of God in creation. And in my critique, I think that the philosophical Kabbalah of the last 500 years has literally run away with these concepts and ideas into all realms of mystical philosophy, and at the same time has fallen further and further away from an actual experience with what these things, actualities, really are. A point that I've made in previous lessons, that in the original material, wherein which the Sefirot are originally mentioned in a Judaic source, apparently, is the Sefer Yetzirah. And it says there, or describes the Sefirot there in the most nebulous of terms, without getting so descriptive. Our text right here is one of the first that actually begins to describe the Sefirot in some way or manner, which of course gave rise to the entire school of mystical philosophy, which we call the Kabbalah Iyunit, or the theoretical Kabbalah. For those of you who are academically inclined, who are of a philosophical bent, then of course the theoretical Kabbalah is just for you. You sit there and talk and banter about all day. Frankly, as we say here, been there, done that. Not for me. I've gone into the older schools, pre-Zoharic schools, the schools that existed in the days of the Talmud and the sages, and before that as well. That to which we call the schools of the Merkava and the Hechalot. And I endeavor to teach you materials and books which you will not have access to anywhere else, simply because everybody else is placing emphasis on the later theoretical teachings. I am placing emphasis on the earlier experiential teachings. So much so that, as you know, I haven't even shied away from teaching the authentic and original, what is called, Jewish magic. In an upcoming series, which I will be offering in months to come. It's going to be the third semester in our Jewish Magic series. We're going to be covering Jewish ritual material, angelic invocations and the likes from the books of Raziel, Brit Menucha, other books such as the Chorban Moshe and the Hechalot, very, very ancient literature that we're going to really extract from it actual magical principles. In order to take that semester three, one must take the first two semesters. They are presently available. For those who did not take that course, you can now take it at a discounted rate. Go to my website, koshertorah.com, and you will have that information there. Now, getting back to tonight. In order to understand any and all of the Sefirot, we must speak of them within the context of experience. Our text does some justice to that. But actually tonight, we're going to digress from our book to introduce you to some other material from another book, which is actually published in this same volume that I have right here in front of me, from a course that I have available called the book Ohel Moed, the teachings of the pre-Arizal classical Kabbalah. I covered that entire book in 28 lessons, and I offer it now as a special discounted rate for summer learning, coupled with the 14 lessons of another ancient text called the Masechet Atzilut. Between the two, there are 40 plus lessons. Together they would run $780. Tonight and tonight only. Sorry you guys listening on tape. This is only for the live students who are going to respond within the next 12 hours. You have until 9 o'clock Tuesday morning the 19th. $780 courses, 75% off, $200. There you go. Don't ask me for installments. Don't tell me you'll pay me next Tuesday. $200. You can go to koshertorah.com, go to the donate a dollar page. Donate $200. When I see it, I'll give you 42 hours of class. Trust me, you'll love it. All right? Anybody really has an issue financially, contact me. I know somebody here who sends me a check all the time. It's okay for you too. Don't miss this opportunity. One of our questioners here is asking the question, which is very legitimate. Do the old schools conflict with the school of the Arizal? So, for example, the cycle of the Shemitot. Yes, Yosef, there is differences. And even though all of the later schools will say that the Arizal is right, the old schools say wrong. You can actually look at Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan and his book, The Immortality of the Soul and Age of the Universe, and he brings down a very interesting point that in Jewish law, we have to come to a decision of practice called halakha. What is the halakha? You have opinion A, you have opinion B, and therefore you have to choose which one. Well, in areas of mysticism, there's no such thing. And I might add, the entire school of the Ari was philosophical in nature, with the exception, of course, of the source of the school, Rav Chaim Vital, who himself was probably one of the most eclectic mystics in all of Jewish history. Everyone wants to portray him like they try to portray Maimonides as being the big theoretical man. Maimonides was very much an adept of the school of the prophets. And Chaim Vital was very much an adept of the school of the magical prophetic Kabbalah. He quotes from Avraham Abu Lafayette, which was censored out of his work. He quotes all the magical rituals, which were censored out of his work. This is a guy who knew his stuff. And with regards to the pre-Adamic civilizations, you will find numerous sources, both before the Ari and after the Ari, who all embrace it, including those who want to interpret the Ari as saying that. Why and where are all of those differences? Topics for another time. Frankly, I don't put much weight into the school of the theoreticals, because they do a lot of talking. Let's see them do some action, and that we don't. So that's why, let them make all of their parochial proclamations always right. Good for you. Okay? That's fine. Let's now talk about experience. I'm going to bring to you again from the book Ohel Moed. Take advantage of my opportunity. Trust me, this is for your benefit. In our book now, we're going to introduce what is called the seventh Sefirah. Now remember these things about Sefirah. Please, I am right now in the process of writing a commentary, an archetypal Kabbalistic experiential commentary to the standing prayer called the Amidah. As such, I am teaching you how to experience. Two courses again is the Ohel Moed and the Masechet Atzilut. If you go into any of the emails that I've been sending out, on the bottom of the emails, you can click on links there and learn all about them. Getting back to our material here. These Sefirot are domains. I think that the standard diagrams of the Sefirot is portraying them as 10 little circles, you know, in orders, really doesn't do justice to the actual experience of their actuality. And that, I think, is very important to understand. Hold on a quick second here. Got to make a little change here, something on my computer. There we go. Okay, now, when we're talking about domains, remember, God is not a person. God doesn't have these little balls. These are domains of consciousness. We talk about what we call the spiritual realms as domains of consciousness. Now, a domain of consciousness always gives rise to a physical domain which embraces it. The relationship of what we call light and vessel. So therefore, when we speak of the emanations of the Sefirot, or the worlds one after another, of course there was the physical side to those manifestations, what we call their Malchut level. And as such, there were always pre-Adamic and pre-our universe civilizations, which exist to this day. In the language of the Ari, philosophical as it is, but most beautiful, it speaks that at the level of our previous discussion of the called Tiferet, there is a transition between what we call the revealed and the concealed. And that right in the middle of this domain called, in quote, the heart, the Tiferet, that which is concealed is revealed. Now, let's explain what all that means without getting theoretical. What is revealed and what is concealed? What's that mean? Let's use it in terms we understand. Conscious and unconscious. Anything which is concealed is unconscious. Anything that is revealed is conscious. The level of the domain which we called Tiferet is the beginning of what we call the revealed levels, dimensions, or domains of that which we call the spiritual plane, wherein which reside entities of many different forms. The entity that resides at the top of the Tiferet level, the highest revealed entity, language of the Ari and the Zohar, is called Ze'er Anpin, or Zah, which is what we would know as a manifestation of God, Yud-Keh, Vav-Keh, in creation. Now, the emphasis is here that this is only a manifestation of God. A point that Rabbi Chaim Vital makes in his Shari Kiddusha, this is called, as we just said, Yukevake, that's God's name, not God's essence. We are in a process of evolution. Again, Chaim Vital states, and I write this, I teach this right out of the Otsrot Chaim, which is available, 21 lessons on our website, that in the beginning, creation occurred because God wanted to be called by his names. It was a process of teleological individuation in God, which of course echoes why we go through that exact same process ourselves. And when we speak about us being created in the divine image, we're talking about being created in the image of these sephirot, which are processes within ourselves. Therefore, when we want to understand what we can understand about the sephirot, because remember, like Sefer Yetzirah says, they are balima, they are essenceless. They don't have a form and structure that we can grasp. In the words of the verse from the book of Job, Me basari achazaloha, from my flesh will I know God. By contemplating our human experience, our human image, we can come and see the reflection of that image above. Now, here's where things get interesting. We've already discussed the essence of consciousness, the revelation and the contemplation, and forces which are expansive and forces which are constricting, coming down to that place of balance, balance being Tiferet. And we said that this Tiferet is half unconscious and now conscious. But what is the purpose of the, in quote, consciousness, the revelation, the gilui of the orot, as we say? There's only one reason why light comes to light, and that is for revelation. But what's the purpose of revelation? So you and I can sit back on our big comfy chairs and go, wow, that's really cool. If that's all that you think it is, boy, have you missed the boat. Revelation of light is energy. Energy is a pulsating, vibrant force. Tiferet, as we're going to see, balances in what we call the yesod, which is right beneath it. Not that there's any real above and below, beneath there, or anything of the kind. It's all symbolic language, remember. But I'm saying this to you to help you understand Tiferet. Because before we go to Tiferet, when we go to Tiferet, to what's below it called Yesod, you've got to understand what happens in between, how it gets from one to the other. Yesod, which is the point of our end, is what we call the libido, sexual energy, creative force, chi, nefesh, ruach, whichever term you want to use, orgone, that blue hue around, which is life and consciousness combined. This emanates out of Tiferet and congeals in the Esau. But it doesn't go straight down. It goes around sides to a right and the left. Why? Because the spiritual world by nature is symbolically cyclical. That is what you must understand. The seventh sephirah emanating from the Keter, which takes the balance of Tiferet. Tiferet is the source of the name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. It is the source of our Torah. It is the source of the heavens and the earth. It is the foundation. What do I do with the foundation? If I have Torah, and it's the foundation of life. Forget anything ethnic. Forget anything religious. Torah is not Jewish. Torah is pre-existent foundation of life and sentience, period. What do I do with that? I don't know. What would you do with it? Would you put it in the bank?
Would you, you know, put it in a jar and put it on your shelf and look at it? Wow, that's really pretty. Or, as a creative being like I am, would you be so overwhelmed by the magnanimity? How big it is, how profound it is. You go, wow! This has got to be shared. This has got to be brought out and shown, taught, given. It's that expansive energy again of the chesed, but this time in a more concerted and directed effort. Think of it like this. The light of chesed goes out in a 360 degree wave, all directions. Netzach goes out only in one direction, 180 degrees. This is why we say that it is at a lower level than chesed, but still in the right column. Or, in other words, it's still going that direction of expansive, but at a limited way. So we always refer to these lights of Netzach and Hod and Yesod, as we're about to learn, as katnut, small, as opposed to chesed, gevor, and tiferet, which are bigger. That's the nature. Netzach, by definition, means victory. It is the power of imposition, wherein which we take the balance of what we call tiferet, the force of the balance and harmony of the universe. There is a natural force that seeks to impose an appropriate level of balance. It is only natural. That balance doesn't exist. It is imposed. That outward movement of the imposition is a force of Netzach. It is a psychological attribute within our brains. My teaching you this right now is an application of Netzach. I am taking this teaching of balance, called Torah, and I'm giving it to you. I'm trying to push it on you. Push, push, push. Victory. Conquest. Netzach. Now, victory, Netzach, conquest doesn't necessarily have to mean violent and destructive. On the contrary, it's done for something much better. Now, let us read what our Shara Kabbalah has to say about it. And then we will expand upon it, as I said, from the Ohel Moed. Ha-Sefira ha-Shevi'it hu Netzach. The seventh sphere, we said, is Netzach. Ve-Hishok Yamin. It is called the right thigh, or the right leg. We'll get to that symbol in a minute. Kvar bir Arnu, because we said that Chesed is on the right side. Ve-Ha-Emtza'i hu Rachamim. The middle, we said, is Rachamim, which we called, again, Tiferet. It is called the anaf of the chesed. It's called like the branch of the chesed, like I've been describing. Okay? And he says, v'hu nitzchi olam. Nitzchi translates usually as eternity. So call this the eternity of the world. Why? Because when you have balance, and you naturally impose the forces of balance. In other words, it's not enough that balance exists and natural law just leaves it up to you to embrace it or reject it. No. There is an actual force in nature that compels us psychologically at a conscious level to do the right thing. And here's where a little bit of rabbinic / Kabbalistic counseling comes in. When I, as a rabbi, do counseling, I am not a PhD psychologist, psychiatrist, and I don't have any letters after my name other than D-U-M-B. But other than that, When I work with an individual, I look to their personality, as opposed to what I believe is the pattern of the 10 sephirot, which is the psychological blueprint of balance and harmony. And I look at where a person has an imbalance. Maybe they're overly rational and not intuitive enough. Maybe they are too passive, hesed, but not strict enough, gebura. Wherever there is an imbalance. Many a time, people have a very laissez-faire, blah attitude about doing what's right. That is what we call a lack of netzach. Because they just don't make the effort. Laziness is an expression of this. Okay? The eternity of the world, getting things right, there's a natural flow and force that gets us to do what's right. Or otherwise, someone wouldn't be coming to me in the first place to ask the questions for which I could, with God's grace, provide an answer. But oto amala natna la Moshe Rabbeinu. This attribute, we say, is the attribute of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is his archetype. Moses was the one who imposed and brought this to the world. Remember, Moses was educated in the finest secular educations of the days, a prince of Egypt. He knew Egyptian religion, Egyptian occultism. He understood the ways and nature and power of how people thought. And then along comes Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei Tiferet, and it's Moses' job to bring it to the world. Which is exactly what he did. Okay? This is his attribute. And there's a big secret here. Oh, a big secret. And therefore, it continues this. Al-Ken Zachal Lekabel Torah. Therefore, it says, he received the Torah. It says, you know, Esh Dat Lamo, from his right hand came forth the Esh Dat Lamo, fire of knowledge, if you will, for his people. Anyway. He says, "Komo shebir arnu," as we've explained, "shah netzach liyamin," because netzach, we said, is on the right side, underneath the chesed. And netzach, eno gadol komo chesed atzmo. It's not as big as the chesed, like I've already explained. Pipnei hitracha komo meiro, because it's distant from it, like we explained. V'ken ataro e ma'im eno shave. He says, like you would see with different types of waters. One is not similar to the other, one that can be more pure and refined in its clarity. Period. And that is all that the Shara Kabbalah has to say about the Nitzach. But as I mentioned to you in one of the series that I'm offering to you tonight, the Ohel Moed expands on the Nitzach and refers to it, the name of God associated with it, which is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which is the Tiferet, Tzevaot. Tzevaot is armies. Now, know and understand something very important. There are many forces in this universe whose job it is to serve Havaya, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. They are God's messengers, armies. Somebody said here, is it not host? The word Tzevaot in Hebrew means armies. What's a host? Okay? Tzava, anybody knows anything, the name of the Israeli army is the Tzava. Tzavaot, in plural, means armies. Mistranslated as hosts, if you will. But hosts actually was a military emphasis. Again, the reason why I was playing the military tunes before we began. Netzach, victory. It is a militaristic imposition. It's not nicey-nice. It's pushy-push. Hamida Hazot, the Ohel Moed says, Hu hi lochemet milchamot Yisrael. This is the attribute which fights the wars of Israel, menetzachat otam, and makes them victorious. L'zot hamida hatamitkaven David betefilato. This is the attribute which David was focused on in his prayers, etc. Right? I'm just skipping through this here. We know this is from the right side, right? And it's therefore called the right leg, as we will explain. Enough. Because in order to understand Netzach, we have to understand it with its sister, Hod. Remember, like I said, Tiferet comes out cyclically to a right and a left. Let me ask you this. Right and the left, opposites. Got it. If I want to impose the order of Tiferet upon you, my question to you is this. What is the benefit of me doing that? Why would I be imposing the Netzach? Why am the Netzach is to impose the Tiferet? Why am I imposing it on you? What am I getting out of it? Right? Why am I compelled to do it? What are the benefits? Remember, Netzach expands out. On the left column, Gavur, and beneath it, Hod, the glory of God, takes in. Well, if I were to impose upon you $1,000,000, I would put a gun there and said, this is $1,000,000, it's yours, it's tax-free, you must take it. You're going to go, gee, thanks. What are you going to do with it? Waste it? No, you're going to use it, hopefully, for something positive and beneficial. Hod is the attribute of the benefit that comes from the proper embrace of the Tiferet imposed upon us by Netzach. Netzach pushes it on you for the benefits that you will receive, which are Hod. So Netzach and Hod are intimately male and female connected. Very, very important to understand this. From our Shara Kabbalah, he writes, this eighth sephira, which we call Hod, is the left leg, or the left thigh, if you will. It is the anaf, or branch, coming from Gevurah, called Din. And it's called Mishur, or the right path. Shemeyasher Adam, the al korcho yitalech mimsharim. It straightens a man's path even against his will, because it gives you the benefit. It's not called severe or strict judgment, right? But it's still restrictive, because it's giving you things. It's weighing you down. But the weighing down here is good, not bad. All right, he says, this is the attribute that was given to Aharon the Kohen. All right? And therefore, he has the power to, it says here, to atone for all the sins of the children of Israel. It says here that the sin, the atonement sins in the temple days was atoned from the side of the north, which is the attribute of the Geburah and everything else, etc. and so on. The Yetzahara b'mitzafon, and we call this, say that the evil inclination also comes from the north. And he quotes here a pasuk. Now, what is all that about? Obviously, we are talking about symbolic language. Let's strip the symbolism and get down to the basics. What is the definition of benefit? Something good for me. So if I impose that $1,000,000 on you, how would you use it? Would you pay off your mortgage and your payments, or if not have a home, purchase an appropriate one that you can live on modestly and act responsibly? That is good. Or would you be like many of these lottery millionaires we read about here in the United States who win $100 million and then are broke 5 years later in the worst position they've ever been before because they comprehensively, I'm going to use the term, piss away the money. Show absolutely no regard or value for it. That is what we call the evil inclination. The perversion of this energy here. Somebody says here, buy a Torah scroll for the shul that's legible, kosher, and readable. No. I don't think that's a good idea. Oh, I'm going to get all the religious mad at me. Too bad. You know why? If a synagogue really needs a Torah scroll, the members of that synagogue should collect together to get it. If you wanted to spend the $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 or $30,000, you know where I think you should go? Help people in need. Put food on their table. Put clothing on their back. Help them in real, actual ways. A Torah scroll, if needed, can be a community collection, as it should be. But if an individual has funds, help other individuals. That is our moral and righteous. Yeshiva students do not deserve to be supported unless they have an arrangement and an agreement with another individual, be it a parent or someone else. But once a yeshiva student gets married and has a family, he is morally obligated, and natural law tells him that he must go out and work for a living. The traditions as performed today in the land of Israel, where they do not work, is evil. It contradicts God. It is satanic. It is demonic. And it is the worst evil thing, and God is going to punish those people for doing that. Trust me, this will happen. This is an evil that has perverted and destroyed. It will bring down a Nazi-like wrath of God and punishment on those people who exist in that perverted, disgusting way. There is nothing good to be said about it. If you as an individual want to sit and study Torah, and someone else wants to pay for you, that's fine. So if Joe Millionaire, if you're out there and you want to support me and give me money to provide for me and my 10 kids, that's your business and mine. Fine, go right ahead. But don't you dare take tax money, public money, and then think that that's a great thing to do? That's terrible. Okay, moving right along. Hod, benefit, value is appreciated. But we are still talking at a surface level. I have to get deeper for you in the time that we have left. So let's move on. Back to the Ohel Moed. Hod. This is said to refer to the name Elohim of armies. Again, the left column. Now what the heck is the difference between Yudke Vavke of armies and Elohim of armies? Well, take a wild guess. What kind of a world do we live in today? And the answer really is a natural one. There are forces in this natural world. And then there are higher forces. The name of God, Yudkei Vavkei, Havayah we call it, today is concealed. It has gone back up into the concealment of the Tiferet. Okay? We have all different ways to describe this. The Arizal has a very beautiful philosophical explanation of it in the lessons of Purim from the Sha'ar HaKavanot, which are available, again, somewhere on Kosher Torah. I translated them in writing. I don't know if I ever taught them in this audio format, but go look for them somewhere, somehow they're around. But my point, yeah, probably my book on the Jewish holidays, I think I have the lessons translated therein. But what he reveals there is very cool. Even though the name Yudke Vavke is concealed, it's not completely gone, because if God's name is gone from the universe, then the universe would cease to exist. But it is, if you will, sheathed, concealed in the name Adonai. The name that we use in the Amidah. And I'm writing about this right now in my Amidah commentary. Go online to koshertorah.com and read it. Adonai is the name associated with, believe it or not, Yeso. And below. Even though there are other names, some say Malchut, but whatever. I'm not going to get into details. The essence what I'm trying to get at is, you have natural law, which is the name Elohim, where in which everything follows according to a generic pattern. And God Yudke Vavke was revealed in the days of Moses, the imposition, supernatural imposition over natural law. Because, however you want to explain the ten plagues in Egypt as being, you know, aspects of nature, well, someone's going to tell me you're not going to be able to do that same thing with the revelation at Sinai. No, that was outright supernatural, above and beyond. We don't have that anymore. But God, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, still acts to override nature, natural law, on a day-to-day basis. But the nature of that intervention is still, if you will, done through natural means, wherein which originally it was done through supernatural means. So therefore, in these days which you call the exile, God still very much intervenes with us, but does so through natural means which override what would be otherwise natural law. That is the name Adonai. That's related to Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. But Adonai has its forces. Elohim has its forces. Each are called upon to act in accordance to their ways. This is the secret of the Merkavah, the relationship of what we call the Ofanim, the wheels, to the Hayot. So you say, what's the relationship of the Ofanim and the Hayot in the Merkavah? Look in Ezekiel chapter 1. It says where the Ofanim, where the Hayot went, the Ofanim went, because they were one connected to the other. It is a parallel dimension. Think of it, if you will, like your physical body and your astral body. That is the relationship we're talking about here. So, if your physical body decides to go and make a right turn, does your astral body say, nah, see you later, I'm going to go make a left? No. They are intimately connected. And that is what we must understand. That which we call Havaya, in this case Adonai, and Elohim, Netzach in this case, Hod in this case, these forces are intimately connected. And, all right, let's get into this. Moses, the Levite, is said to embrace the power or to be the archetype of Netzach. Aharon, the Kohen, is supposed to be embracing this power of Hod. He's the archetype of Hod. You might not understand that there is a problem here. And the problem is that the light of the Tiferet in the present epoch has emanated as a mirror reflection in reverse of what its natural order is. Look for your own organic brain for proof. Raise your right hand. What part of your brain controlled your moving your right hand? Answer, your left brain. Right, the left side. That is how it is. Now understand. This is something that the Arizal also talks about. Shara Psukim in the book of Yechezkel. In the ways and things are now, there's an inversion where right has become left and left has become right. There is a reversal of the heavenly order as it reflects down below. So essentially now, everything that we have here below is a mirror opposite of how it is above. Or in other words, what is below right is above left, and what is below left is above right. And we say when the proper balance of Tiferet is restored, that's what we call the coming of Mashiach. Everything will be restored to its proper place. And the Arizal writes, this is the secret in the book of Ezekiel, that the Levites in the days of Mashiach will become the new priests, Kohanim, and the Kohanim will become the new Levites. Because the Levites of the left are supposed to be dominant, whereas the Kohanim today on the right are supposed to be subservient. Aharon emanated properly in his place on the left column, Moses, who is the Levite, emanates properly on the right. And the order of what they represent in archetypes will only be realized when the Messiah comes. Now, let's go even deeper. Netzach and Hod, as you'll read in the Ohel Moed, I'm just paraphrasing it for the sake of time here in brevity, so we haven't even gotten yet to Netzach. Netzach and Hod are referred to symbolically as the two brass pillars of Solomon's temple called the Yachin and Boaz. They are, again, that's a symbol, it's no brass or anything, because they are foundational to our relationship to the Torah. In the older writings, it is taught that Netzach and Hod are the psychological attributes through which the spirit of prophecy materializes. And how could that be? Well, it's simple. Tiferet emanates balance. Prophecy has always been a spirit of passion and motivation for the sake of bringing good moral foundations to the people. Prophecy wasn't always about telling the future. Read your prophets. Theirs was a voice of passion to get the people right. Netzach. For the sake of the glory Hod of God. That is why your philosophical, theoretical Kabbalists today can never experience prophecy because they have no feelings left. They think to sit around going, oy, 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 that's feelings. No. Have a little bit of schnapps, a little bit of vodka, that's feelings. No! You have to be clear of mind, pure in passion. Passion. Remember that, eh? That is the introduction of our night sapira. Yesod. Ashana Kabbalah writes that this night sapira, again, just as a little bit, so we're going to expand on it, is called the Tzadik Yesod Olam, the righteous foundation of the world. Alright, he says, from this realm comes forth all the souls. And interestingly, almost in contradiction to the later Kabbalah, he says that this is also called the seventh day. It is called the Shabbat. And he says, how is this the seventh? Because we say Hesed is considered one, Gevurah 2, Tiferet 3, Netzach 4, Hod 5, and the upper Sefirot, not called Keter Chochmah Bina, but Machshava. Chokhmah Bina, the three of them together, that's like one. So that's like six, and therefore Yesod becomes now the seventh. And he goes, this is what it means when God rested on the seventh day. It corresponds to the sign of the covenant, genitalia. Okay? And it is the secret of the Brit Milah. And it is bonded to and connected to the Shekhinah, the tenth Sefirah, the final form, which of course we will discuss in our final class in this series, God be willing, next week. But now, getting back to this absolutely important Netzach. Excuse me, Yesod. Yesod. Yesod means foundation. Genitalia. Remember we said that it is directly below and is a lower form of the Tiferet. The purpose of the emanation of the Tiferet is the revelation of the Yesod. But the way that the Tiferet comes out to manifest the Yesod is through imposing its order for the sake of the benefit that it receives. And when that is in proper polarity and balance psychologically within our individual psyches and minds, there wells up within us like a flowing fountain, bubbling over, a wellspring of creative juices, passion, desire, creative craving. Freud debased it by calling it sexual, but it's far more than sexual. The energy in the genitalia. Does anybody who knows anything about natural energy, medicine, and healing knows, is a far more powerful force than just sex. Now, there are always attractive members of the opposite sex out there. If you are a normal human being, every day you're going to see an attractive man or an attractive woman who will turn your head. Big deal. I don't consider that anything bad. Other like these imbalanced, psychiatrically ill people who try to pervert and destroy any concept and semblance of the image of a woman. Clearly an indicative sign of a mental illness on their part. But what do we do with these attractions? Well, I see attractive women every day. What do you think I do? I don't. That's right. I don't. Every day, I can be passing a Burger King or a McDonald's. I really don't have this overwhelming desire to just run in there and have a cheeseburger. In all due respect, I'm an old man. I'm 50 plus, and I'm very happy to act my age. I don't have to be 55 going on 16 and having to want to run after 20-year-old babes. Not my thing. Sorry. Why? Because I recognize what sex is for. Sex is supposed to be an expression of bonding, of intimate passion, of two souls. Sorry, anybody who's gay, but that's why it's supposed to be male and female. Okay? It's a harmony and balance of all the energies that are natural. This is the point. Now, we can love anybody. We can find people attractive all the time. So what? I, for example, people might yell at me for saying so, but I don't care, you know that. If two members of the same sex wish to love one another, I don't have a problem with that either, as long as they're not necessarily expressing that in any physical way, which violates natural law, parts of which we don't need to get into because you know what I'm getting at. I would never condemn individuals for loving one another, because love is supposed to transcend sex. And anybody of you who's married, now, if you have any kind of a secular lifestyle, where in which you might have been very sexually active at a younger age, what's it like after you're married for 10, 20 years? You're still hopping in the sack 2-3 times a day like you did when you were kids? Well, most people I know don't. Just the way it is. Does that mean you love your partner any less? On the contrary, you love him more. Reminds me of the song from the movie/play Fiddler on the Roof, when Tevye, the character, was asking his wife, "Do you love me?" He says, "Do I what? Do you love me?" He says, "For 25 years, I've cooked for you, I've washed your clothes, I've nursed you when you were sick. If that's not love, what is?" That is real love. Libido is an expression of creative energy which you project with your partner for the sake of building something better. That is what creative energy is all about. And people who have that creative energy do great things with it. Because it's not like they're compelled to be a busy beaver. But on the contrary, people who are, if you will, possessed by libido energy, to come, the greatest artists, the greatest musicians, the greatest scientists, the greatest thinkers, the greatest poets, the greatest writers, the greatest feelers. That is why Joseph is the archetype. Because look who Joseph was. The one who the Bible says that he was able to hold back his passions and not commit adultery, which obviously even in those days was considered a sin before the days of the giving of the Torah. And because he was able to hold back his passions, the energy within him was able to materialize naturally into a different form many years later and catapulted him to the leadership, prime ministership, almost unnaturally in the land of Egypt. And we know God's hand was behind it. But Joseph had a little bit of a hand in that as well. This is the secret here. The purpose of the revelation of the light of God, what we call God's path, what we call His Torah, was specifically to create within us a sense of balance, harmony, polarity, which would then, as we will learn in our next class, project itself below to create what we call the physical world in which we live in, the whole purpose of everything above. This is the physical form in the vessel. And then everything bounces back up. In the newer works, they correspond Malchut to be the Shabbat. But here the Ohel Moed, as well as our Sha'ar HaKabbalah Bokir, correlates Yesod with the Shabbat, the seventh day. Why? Because we speak of the heavens and the earth, the revealed, the concealed, the natural and the supernatural acting within the natural. That is what the Sabbath is supposed to be. It is a time of energetic balance and harmony. This is why ritual work is forbidden on the Sabbath day. Any kind of creative activity which imbalances, implements, embellishes, creates within the force of nature itself. No, we have to allow nature to take its course, and therefore we do not impose upon the nature the human creative activity. We take one step up and above. This is the true essence of Yesod. It comes about when we have imposed the balance of Tiferet, received its benefit. That benefit is called the glory of God. Now, don't walk away when I tell you that Netzach and Hod are the sources of prophecy. Because, like I said, each of these give rise to domains. The Netzach, we said, corresponds to the name Yudke Vavke Tzavaot, God, Yudke Vavke of armies. The other to Elohim Tzavaot. I spoke to you about the Chayot, I spoke to you about the Ofanim. No one understand that the reason why you had two cherubim on top of the Ark of the Covenant, and why Solomon built the two big cherubim in the Holy Temple, was specifically to correlate between Netzach and Hod, the right and left armies of God. The Yudke Vavke Adonai armies, represented by the angel called Metatron, and the natural force armies under Elohim Tzavaot, under the power of the name Sandalphon. Those are the two cherubim, if you will, the cherub and the ophon, the heaven and the earth, the concealed, the revealed, the sources of prophecy. When you practice the Merkava ascents or descents, these are the hosts, the armies. Because remember, Metatron and sandal phone are both collective hive beings, and as such they are the ones who we come in contact with in the prophetic experience. That is Netzach and Hod. That is the balance. That is the relationship. When we have balanced ourselves in proper harmony and relationship to Torah, the natural way of existence in the universe, then we have alignment with the natural creative flow that comes through us. It brings us in touch with those angelic forces of the Sandalphone and Metatron collectives, the two cherubim on the Ark of the Covenant. That is the whole purpose of the Merkava, descent, ascent, call it whatever you want. That is what puts us in contact with God. And that enables us to go into the higher and different realms of consciousness. So you see how everything is in a proper sense of balance. That is the nature of all that we are talking about here. Now, for those of you live here, and I guess you on tape, heard we had a little bit of a technical difficulty here. Might have lost a couple minutes there. Sorry, guys. I don't control these things, unfortunately. I am a subject to natural law and technology as anybody else. But I will tell you this. We were speaking about the angels, Metatron and Sandalphone, and them being the cherubim on the Ark of the Covenant, and how we connect and channel and relate. And I guess they must have been listening. And I guess things that are meant to go out, and things that aren't. And I guess maybe if you really feel so desperate to miss, to get those last few minutes, you can always get the class. It'll be online tomorrow. But anyway, pay attention to what I'm saying. This is not theoretical. This is actual. Something that got lost with the later theoretical schools. You have to practice the techniques. That's why I got my Sefer Yetzirah courses and all this other stuff. Learn the original ways. Take my Ultra, take my whatchamacallit, the Ohel Moed courses, Masechet Atzilut courses again. $780 together, tonight only, $200 for the two of them. You want them, it's there for you. Take advantage of the opportunities to learn. Because that is what the actual fulfillment of Netzach and Hod is. Netzach betters you for the sake of the glory of God, which is Hod. Imposing of the system for the receiving of the benefit thereof. And when that is all in balance, the wellsprings of life gush forth with all types of creativeness to bring us the final form, Malchut, to be discussed in our next class. Thank you all for joining me tonight. I am, again, your host, Ariel Gatzadon. You'll find me online at koshertorah.com, God be willing. I'll see you all in our next class. Thank you all for joining me. God's blessings. Shalom.